welcome back to the Tipsy Archives. This is your host, Rachel Liggy, and I just wanted to say it's been too long. It's been way too long since I've recorded. It's been 2018. Is that the year, Erin?
It is 2018.
Okay, cool. It's 2018, and I've only released one podcast this year, and it's March.
It's actually April.
It's April.
It's nearly May.
I am brain fried. Okay. It's April, and I did one podcast in January, and for anyone who has been listening, or friends of mine probably know, I'm working on a degree at the University of British Columbia, and sometimes it's kind of intense, and I've been working really hard, and working as well at my job, and I love school. I'm working on a degree in art history and essentially museum studies, as I do talk about a lot in the podcast. But sometimes it takes over my life and I don't have time to work on, you know, episodes, and that kind of sucks. But here we are, ready to record another one.
You have your life back for a short period of time.
For a short period of time before summer term starts, and even then I hope to get a couple done. So if you have been listening to the podcast for the last couple years, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming back. Obviously, someone's listening because we have, like, a few thousand downloads.
There you go.
So,
people like us.
You're awesome. and thanks for coming back. And sorry about the long break. It's not what I would like, but it is what it is. And the more I'm in school, the more cool stuff I'm learning to share with everyone. And hopefully, you know, these long breaks won't happen too often. But anyway, today we're back. And I am joined by Erin Redekov.
Hello.
Who is an old favorite co-guest of mine or co-host of mine. I think you and I haven't recorded since last fall, where we talked about the Unbelievable show.
I think that was the last time we recorded. We've had a number of things we've wanted to talk about, but we just haven't got around to it.
Yeah, so today we are going to talk about one of our favorite topics, which is European royalty.
Woot woot!
Mm-hmm. So, Erin, before you did any research for this podcast, when I say to you, Richard the Lionheart, what's the image you get in your mind?
I get this, like, sort of, like, big, burly, macho man, and then I think of, like, the snake from Robin Hood standing beside him for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, that's Prince John.
That is Prince John. Yeah. But I always think of, like, no, I think of, like, this burly man, and I don't think of, like, I know John's, like, the weird lion, right? Mm. But I still think, whenever I think Richard the Lionheart, I think of the snake from...
So you have this Disney Robin Hood
but,
association then, going on in your brain.
Yeah.
So that's actually where I wanted to go with this, was that, so you probably know this about me. People may not know. I'm a huge Robin Hood fan.
You are.
I love the cartoon. There's a lot of movies about Robin Hood that I love, or shows, and I just love the idea of it, you know, like outlaws and archers in the forest robbing the rich, and during, like, this medieval era, it's very romantic. So growing up, the idea of King Richard, or Richard the Lionheart, like, to me as a kid, was always, like, the heroic, romantic, you know, like, returning, like, hero king.
Yeah, like, I always thought of him as a great king, like, this sort of, like, magnificent figure that, you know, rules his kingdom and defends everyone's honor, and...
Yeah, like, when you grow up with the Robin Hood story, or even, like, a lot of the mythology around Richard the Lionheart, I mean, he's painted as this larger-than-life hero.
Mm-hmm.
But what we want to talk about today is, who really is Richard the Lionheart, and was he, in fact, a good king of England?
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more complicated than that. I mean, and in fact, the Robin Hood story, which has very little basis in historical fact, there's not really a Robin Hood figure. There's, like, maybe a couple of people it's very loosely based on.
Yeah.
They certainly did not rob from the rich and give to the poor. They were just straight up robbing people.
Yeah.
And it was not during the lifetime of Richard the Lionheart or Prince John. These are very real people in the Plantagenet family. And these were the Plantagenet family or the Angevin rulers. So these are rulers from Anjou. They really are a French family who are happened to also be kings of England.
Yeah, and especially in like Richard's case, like both of his parents are French. Because it's like the rulers from Anjou, and then his mother is Eleanor of Aquitaine, who's also like, which is also in France.
Yeah, so they own they have a lot of French lands as well as English lands. You know, they're a lot of them don't even speak English.
Yeah,
they spend very little time actually in England.
Well, and even with Richard II, it's curious. People don't know whether or not he actually spoke English or not, too. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, his parents are Henry II.
Yeah.
And Eleanor of Aquitaine. Eleanor of Aquitaine, we won't get into too much, but she's a very interesting person.
Yeah, I know we want to do a podcast on her in the future, so.
At some point, she'd be a great person to talk about. I mean, you don't hear about medieval queens who divorce their first husband, the King of France, just because they're not into it.
Yeah.
And then go to England and marry the King of England.
Yep.
But that's what she did, and she was very involved in politics and had a lot of power.
She went on crusade.
She went on crusade, and she was also thought to be, like, very beautiful and carried herself in a way that was quite scandalous, I think.
Yes, well, there's some reference to her, how she'd, like, ride into battle during the Crusades, like, bare-breasted, like, Lady Godiva, and I don't know
That sounds like there's no way that could be true.
I feel like it's probably not true, but
it's probably one of those slut-shaming things that people were spreading, like, gossip about her, like, oh, did you hear what she did?
She did this again, and then her troubadours?
Yeah, so these, This is Richard's parents, and when he was born, or like when he was younger, he was never meant to be in line for the throne. He is from a family of four brothers, the oldest being the young Henry.
Yeah.
And then followed by Jeff.
Yes.
Jeffrey.
Let's call him Jeff.
I just really like calling him Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, Jeff. Jeffy.
And then Richard, and then little brother John. So, one thing I have to say about this family right off the bat, like, the more I read about them, the Plantagenet men are kind of assholes, and they have, like, terrible tempers. And they are, like, very stubborn and full of themselves, and so the oldest three brothers at some point try to overthrow their father.
Yeah, they have a terrible relationship with him. They don't think that he's been a good king, and well, and they do that.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with whether or not he's being a good king. The thing is, when they're teenagers or young adults, he divvies out a bunch of land to them. He gives John's like two, so he's not a part of this.
Yeah,
but he gives I know he gives Richard Aquitaine.
Yes.
Which is one of the reasons why he's always loved Aquitaine so much. He spends a lot of time there. He says, like, this is your domain now. He gives, the two other brothers different parts. One's a chunk of France, and I think one's a chunk of England.
Yeah.
But then he kind of says, like, now you're my co-rulers, go and take care of this. But he doesn't allow them to collect any money from the regions. He doesn't give them any actual power at all. He stays completely in charge and just kind of, like, has them as figureheads in name only.
Yeah.
And this totally pisses them off.
Yeah, because they each want to be able to rule their domain independently. And because most of them are living there, they feel like they know the land better, and
yeah, and yeah. He's not allowing them to have any income.
No.
And Henry II, the father, he is very controlling.
Yeah.
And just, like, at first when I was doing this research, I thought, oh man, what a bunch of horrible sons. Like, they have this rebellion, they're trying to overthrow their father, this is awful.
Yeah.
But the more I read about it, I realized that Henry II is really a dick.
Yup.
And even to the point where the mother, Eleanor, she sides with the sons, and she's in on the rebellion.
Yeah, and there's even rumors that she was the one that encouraged them to start the rebellion.
Well, it seems like Richard is very much a mama's boy.
Yes.
And they are very close, and so whatever Richard wants to do, Eleanor's basically on board, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So they organize this rebellion. They even get some lords involved because there's a lot of people in the kingdom that are not very happy with Henry.
Yeah.
But Henry has enough military power, that they can't overthrow him. Like, it's an unsuccessful rebellion.
Yeah. Well, and, like, Henry has a lot more money than they have, so he's able to raise a pretty impressive army.
Yeah, because he wouldn't let them have any money.
Exactly.
Because he knew that maybe they would try to overthrow him.
Yeah. Oops.
This family has a lot of problems.
Yeah, they don't really get along very well.
So this rebellion happens, and surprisingly, they don't get punished too badly.
No.
Like, he kind of, gives them a slap on the wrist, probably takes a bit of their land away for a while. But in the end, he's kind of like, oh, we're all family.
Yeah, they have a truce, and...
They have a truce, they work it out. I mean, clearly it's much more complicated than that, but we're kind of, glossing over the major details here.
Well, and then, like, when they are taken back, like, when they have their truce, he does still give them some land and terms, but it's a lot less than what they used to have, and he, like, I think Richard gets, like, he gets, like, 4 castles or something in Aquitaine, so it's, like, half of what he had before.
Hmm. Well, I mean, that seems fair.
I know, I feel like it's actually pretty generous of Henry to be like, here you go, you revolted against me, but still have some land.
Although, so, King Henry sort of forgives his sons.
Yeah.
But he does not forgive Eleanor.
Not at all.
No, he keeps her, at some point she had tried to sneak away.
Yeah.
And she was caught, and he threw her in jail, and he keeps her there. Because he is pretty pissed off. You don't do that to your husband.
No. The jail's a pretty nice jail from what I know about it, though. Like, I think it's, like, jail as in she's trapped in a castle or something.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
So after this, actually his oldest son, the young Henry, dies.
Yeah.
Of dysentery, I believe. And Jeff dies, too. Which I think is from a wound from a tournament.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So this puts Richard suddenly, as the oldest, the next in line for the throne. But there's still some hurt feelings, and King Henry does not want to name him his successor.
No.
So this leads to Richard taking off, I think, to go hang out in France.
Yes.
So to strengthen his own position, Richard allies himself with the 22-year-old Philip II.
Yes.
I think that this is kind of when they develop a very close relationship. And one of the things that... So one thing I'll say about Richard, King Richard, is it does seem at this point in time now, historians are very divided about him in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a good king? You know, is he a good warrior? He didn't spend very much time in England. And this is a big thing that people now are kind of saying, like, oh, he didn't care about England at all. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But there's a lot of rumors about Richard that historians are quite, in debate over.
Yeah.
And one of them is about Richard's sexuality.
Yes.
And, especially involving this Philip II. And they would spend a lot of time together. They could be quite inseparable. They shared meals together.
Mm-hmm.
And it is written by a court contemporary who was hanging out with them at the time that they, they had this passion for each other and that they would share the same bed.
Yes.
But a lot of historians argue that at the time this wouldn't have been strange.
Yeah, because most kings essentially kept court in their bedrooms. Like, there were so many people in your bedroom already, and then it makes sense to have, like, the two people there because you can be guarded better and you can conduct business there.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to say. I mean, it does seem strange to what we know of kings and queens. It's like, why wouldn't you have the luxury of having your own bedroom if you could? Like, there's really no reason for them to sleep together other than apparently it was really kind of like a PC thing, like a photo op, where, you know, people would see that they shared so much time together, and it made them look good, I guess. Like a political alliance.
Well, and if you're sharing a bed together, then obviously you can't be plotting against each other, because you could just, like, stab the other one in their sleep or something. And
yeah, I guess then, too, it could be the move of them keeping an eye on each other so they couldn't go off and have secret meetings.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's really under a lot of debate, and I think it seems like, to me, from stuff I've read, it seems like Richard had big appetites for everything.
Yeah.
You know, he was this amazing soldier, warrior, you know, he's a huge guy, he's like 6'5", or something like that, he's like said to be quite handsome.
Yeah.
It didn't seem necessarily that he was gay, because he seemed to also have relationships with women.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't manage to father any children with his wife, because he spent no time with her.
Yeah, he didn't seem interested in his wife at all. Like,
so that's kind of one of those things, too, where if you're on the side of arguing that he was gay, you could say, well, he didn't sleep with his wife. But also, he was at war all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, too, like, if you are a soldier, and you're literally surrounded with soldiers all the time, and you want to screw somebody, like, all you have is men around you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe you are going to hook up with guys.
Yeah.
Because of convenience.
He also could have been bisexual.
Could have been. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like, it sounds like he had a relationship with women. He had an illegitimate son, so he had slept with a woman.
Yes.
At least once. So, like, who knows? Like, we have no idea. This is just, like, a lot of people's different opinions on this. I would guess that he was a guy who liked to get what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He had big appetites of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was bisexual and he took whatever he wanted to get.
That really fits with what you think about him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he does seem to be this person, like, he goes off to war because he'd rather be, you know, on crusade than ruling a country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he does do what he wants, and he could have sent, you know, trusted noblemen and off to the crusade and stayed back and ruled like most kings did at that time.
No, oh, he's really interested in war.
He's really interested in war. He's really interested in anything that seems to raise his adrenaline. So
exactly.
I feel like he's an adrenaline junkie is what I think we'd call him in modern day.
But yeah, so regardless of whether or not it was sexual or not sexual, he definitely seemed to have a bromance going on with Philip II.
Yes.
At least for a period of time. Eventually around this time, Henry II does die, eventually of illness. And I don't think he... I read actually different accounts whether or not he at the last moment did name Richard, and then other ones where he never did. But regardless, Richard comes in and takes over.
And it's like, there's some weird rumors, too, that, like, you know, Henry II eventually let Eleanor of Aquitaine out of prison and sent her to Aquitaine to rule Aquitaine instead of having Richard rule it, because he didn't want Richard to rule Aquitaine. And
I read that one of the first things Richard did as king was to let his mother out of jail.
Yeah, and so again, it's like, you don't... Mm-hmm. There's so many weird elements where you don't know which is true. And, like, to me, it makes a lot more sense that Richard's first thing as king would be to let his mother out of jail than that Richard II would all of a sudden forgive Eleanor and send her over instead of Richard. Like, I feel like he's much more likely to forgive his son rather than his mother.
Yeah, I think he stubbornly held on to not wanting Richard to take over. But even in those last few years, I mean, he and Prince John, the youngest, had been close for a period of time, John and Henry, King Henry. Because John was so young, and because John never rebelled against him because he was too young. So John was his favorite for a period of time, but he even pissed John off to the point where in the last couple of years of his life or so, John went and joined Richard's side against him. And that was over, I want this castle and you won't give me this castle. You're only going to give me this castle. So, which still seems like petty royal bullshit.
It really seems like something that we would have reality TV for nowadays.
Yeah. It doesn't have a big enough drawbridge.
My moat is smaller than your moat.
So now Richard becomes king.
Yay!
So, yay, I guess. He has spent very little time in England. Like we said, he doesn't he probably doesn't speak English. He spends most of his time in Aquitaine or in France.
Yeah.
He goes over for the coronation because, of course, he has to.
He, you know, it's in Westminster Abbey.
He stays not for very long, like a month or two. And then he goes back to Aquitaine and starts planning a crusade.
There's also some really weird rumors that happen when he's home. For the crusade, there's, like, these rumors that he ordered a bunch of Jewish people to be killed.
Oh, okay, I know a little bit more about this. Around the time of his coronation, there was some miscommunication, and there was, you know, quite a few Jewish people in England at the time, and I guess the miscommunication was that they were rising up against something, and soldiers went and killed a bunch of them. And so what was happening, like, this actually is a setup for the crusade, is that, so, as now in the world, so I'm going to see how much I can talk about Jerusalem without hitting on any major hot button stuff, but that is a very hard thing to do.
It is very tough.
Because as it was today, as it was 2,000 years ago or more, and as it was then in the 12th century, Jerusalem is a hotly contested political nightmare. So it had been, so the crusade that Richard runs is the Third Crusade. Before that, the First and Second Crusades were about taking it back from, I'm guessing, Muslim conquest.
Yeah, it was Muslim conquest and, like, Turks and stuff.
So Jerusalem just gets passed back and forth, basically, between Christian soldiers, Muslim soldiers. Obviously, they both claim it to be very important to them, their culture, their religion.
Yeah.
This is, like, still a problem today.
Well, because everybody wants to hold the original land.
Yeah, there's a number of religious sites there that are very important to all these religions, and it's very problematic.
Yeah.
So around the time of this is happening, I don't have the exact year, but close to Henry II's death and Richard's coronation, Saladin, an Egyptian Islamic king, takes Jerusalem back from the Christian forces that had been holding it. And this is, you know, obviously quite an uproar, to the point that, and I thought this was very interesting given the thing, what happens today in our world with Islamophobia and general xenophobia, fear of immigrants, that kind of thing, that the ripples of that even affected the Jewish people in England. And they, you know, thought, like, oh, we can't go to Jerusalem and fight the non-Christians there, and it created problems for the Jews there too,
right?
Because they would see non-Christians and take out their anger on them.
That makes sense.
And they kind of got caught up in a lot of sort of misinformation, where people were wanted to kind of take out a lot of rage of, like, being poor and stuff, and a lot of Jewish people were killed. And, like, pretty brutally around the time of Richard's coronation. And there were some riots. And Richard's position was reportedly that he didn't, you know, necessarily want people to get hurt.
Yeah.
But was that more because he cared about the subjects? Or was that more because the Jews were a really good source of money for him?
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. And
but he wasn't pro-Jews being killed. And he didn't order them to be killed.
Yeah, there was just a rumor that that happened. Mm-hmm. That he had said that. And then there was a bunch of people in London that started attacking.
Yeah. Took it upon themselves to attack Jewish businesses and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even, like, even with that, and this is partially how you can tell that Richard was not in favor of it, is many of them were able to find sanctuary in the Tower of London. Mm. Although there was apparently a bunch of people that were, like, forcibly baptized into Christianity and stuff.
Yeah, too. There was one story that I had heard. I was listening to a lecture from the Great Courses about this, the coronation, in the last couple days. And they were talking about how, like, a bunch of them had taken refuge somewhere. And the forces outside said, if you come out and you let us baptize you, we will let you go. And then the ones that came out just got killed.
Yeah.
But that did happen, that some Jewish people did get baptized as Christians and were let go free. And probably continued to be Jewish in their own homes, but...
Yeah, but outwardly Christian.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, there's that tension from Jerusalem present in England anyway.
Yeah.
So that had recently happened. So that's then Richard's thinking, like, this is a perfect opportunity for me to go on crusade, because what makes you, like, you know, a bigger figure in history? What makes you the greatest warrior ever?
Yeah.
And to have your own crusade.
Well, and the previous crusades had failed, so... Or at least the second one had failed.
The second one had failed. I think the first one was successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to do a little bit more research on that.
I know for sure that the second crusade
was What was the one failure. That was an absolute clusterfuck? So the fifth one?
I think so. Is that the one where, like, pretty much nobody, like, everybody gets sick and stuff, too? Or...
I think the fifth one was disastrous.
Yeah.
They're all pretty ridiculous.
They really are.
To go on crusade, I mean, you gotta move, like, all these armies. And then Henry and his boyfriend, Philip II.
Yeah.
Or his bro. He also agrees to go on crusade with him.
Yeah.
And probably with some other rulers, I think, from Holy Roman Empire. There's some people in on it from that.
Yeah, and it's still the Holy Roman Empire at that point.
Yes.
That moment where I was
guys,
like,
it's so complicated.
I know. Like, because everybody changes, like, everything changes names.
Yeah.
Because anytime somebody new rules somewhere,
they're all their names are Henry name. And Catherine and Richard and Mary and.
Yeah. And then it's like, when, you know, Henry's in charge of something, it's called X. And then if Philip's in charge of it, it's called Y.
I actually have. I really need to have that poster mirror.
Oh, yeah. The one that's got all of the kings.
I have a great poster mirror that my friend Jackson gave me as a gift. And it is the family tree of, like, a whole bunch of kings and queens of England. And it starts with Charlemagne and it ends in present day. And it's really fun to go on there and find them and see where they connect. And, like, sometimes the lines are crossing, like, over, under. Like,
yeah.
Because they're all related. But, like, I need that, like, right in front of me as I'm talking about this stuff, because it's difficult.
It really is.
But, yes, okay, so Richard wants to have a crusade because he is the biggest bro of the Middle Ages.
He's the macho man.
He's the machoest man. And so what do you need when you go on crusade? Tons of money.
And lots of horses.
Lots of horses, lots of money, lots of men.
Yeah.
So... There's no doubt that Richard was, like, an amazing warrior. He's an amazing strategist. He was really amazing at logistics.
Yep.
He was really good at figuring out how to move his armies around. So, like, he was really smart at this stuff.
Yeah.
But he still needed a ton of money. So he taxed the shit out of England. Basically, everything was for sale in England.
Well, and this is where we get in the Robin Hood mythology of, like, the Sheriff of Nottingham and, like, everybody going around and collecting all of the taxes is well, that's what to I wanted, fund crusades.
Yeah, I wanted to bring it back around to that, because even though it's not a true story, the thing about Robin Hood, the story as we know it sort of now in the movies, it does illustrate, like, some aspects of life for the people, which is that they were extremely downtrodden.
Yeah.
Extremely poor. And even they were poor in, like, eating scraps of bread. Like, they were still being taxed.
Yeah.
For money that they didn't have. But the thing that the Robin Hood story doesn't tell you is that it's Richard's fault.
Yes.
So he's basically done this to them. And King John, or Prince John, wasn't left in charge.
No.
He wanted to be left in charge. He's angry that he wasn't left in charge.
Yeah.
But England has left in charge of Eleanor of Aquitaine and William Longchamp.
Yes.
Yeah. So another trusted advisor who are basically running the country. But yeah, so, I mean, and John is scheming and doing shady things probably and trying to get lords on his side because he probably feels like he should be running England, which, to be fair, I mean, he's there.
I feel like John and Eleanor should be running England. But I mean, in a male-dominated society, I can also see why he's really angry that he's not ruling instead of his mother, too.
For sure.
Like, I personally believe that Eleanor is fine to rule and should rule, but I come from a very different society than John does.
Yeah, I mean, Eleanor is amazingly seems to be fairly respected, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, she's one of those really impressive figures in history.
She's a boss bitch, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in the way that we see people, like, poor and destitute in Robin Hood, The reality is, it was because of Richard.
Yup.
Even though they're like, oh, we can't wait for him to come back. And
well, and I think because he's gone, mm-hmm. there's this belief that, you know, everything's shitty because he's, like, he's off on crusade. And if he comes back because he's such a great ruler, everything will be fine. And it's like...
But there's no context to, like, back that up, that he's a great ruler, because he hasn't even been there.
Yeah.
And he... So he was king for, I think, 10 years. And he was... The time he spent in England during that 10-year period was 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say 4 months, but yeah. It's... Yeah, it's so like...
It's like a couple months at the beginning of his reign, and then he goes to Aquitaine, and then he's on crusade. Eventually he comes back for a little bit of time. Then he leaves again to go to Aquitaine, and then he dies.
Yeah. And he doesn't even die in England. No, he dies in Aquitaine.
He's not even buried in England.
Yeah.
He's buried in France.
Yeah.
And actually three different places, because they split up his organs.
So his intestines over here.
They are.
His liver is over here.
His intestines are specifically, like, in the Church of Rouen or something like that. But then the rest, most of his body is in, Angevin is Anjou.
Yes. It's
mostly in Anjou. But yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if this is just, like, a narrative we have now about, like, this romantic idea that we think people had.
Yeah.
Or if at the time people actually liked the idea of Richard at all, that I don't really know.
Yeah.
His figure was very much written up in, like, literature later on as being a heroic king. I'm sure that, I guess, people who were very religious probably liked the idea of what he was doing, which was to go recapture Jerusalem for the Christians.
Yeah.
But, I mean, most people were probably just hungry.
Yeah, and I feel like in the end, like, they care more about getting food than...
Yeah, they're just, like, do you think people in the Middle Ages or any time really gave a shit about who was in charge of the country?
No, I think they only gave, like, it only mattered to them to the extent of different rulers had different taxes, different mm-hmm. rulers had different... Like, it was important for them to have protection because, you know, in that time, like, say there's a giant battle mm-hmm. in somewhere in England in that area. If you run a farm near there, you know, your fields are going to get trampled on. People are going to eat you out of house and home. And...
Well, and if people were at this time trying to attack England.
Yeah.
Which I don't think there was much of that. Because by the time Richard came back, he just went back to defending Aquitaine from the French king.
Yeah.
So, during this time, too. So, Richard goes on crusade. They get to the area of Jerusalem, Israel area.
Yeah.
And they retake the city of Acre, which is a huge battle.
Yeah.
I believe that... I don't know if it was under Saladin's forces or another Islamic king...
I think it's still under Saladin.
Saladin had conquered it, or he had a lot of troops there or something.
Yeah.
So they do take it, and Richard takes in... So there's a little story about whether or not Richard's a good guy.
Yeah.
But then also, like, he just cares about winning, so... but yeah, he has something like 3,000 prisoners.
Yeah.
And he says to Saladin, I'll release your prisoners for X amount of money.
Yeah.
A big amount of money. And Saladin can't pay it. So he executes them one by one, which takes days. Like, it takes so long.
Yeah.
And, like, I think just the way that the loss of life in Acre was just, like, women and children, and, like, it was just brutal.
Yeah, it's not like he's, like, executing warriors or something.
Well, I mean, there's a ton of civilians that are dying.
Yeah.
So that was a very good battle for them. And shortly after that, at this point is when Richard insults an important duke... That is going to come back later.
Leopold.
He insults Leopold, who, I mean, this guy's from...
Austria.
So, yeah. Which is in the Holy Roman Empire?
Yeah, Austria or... would be... Oh, I don't know if Austria was in it at this point. It is at various times, but...
Okay, well, he's from Austria.
Yeah.
He ends up insulting him, and Leopold's just like, screw this, I'm going home. At the same time, the French king, too, is like, well, this was a really good victory, but this is really as far as I feel like going. I'm gonna also pack up and go home. So, but Richard cannot stop.
No.
And he just has, like, he has it out for Saladin. Like, yeah. This guy is, like, his arch nemesis. He is focused on him.
It's like Mortal Kombat.
But with thousands of people.
Yes.
And so they fight, like, this long, grueling battle over Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm reading this book right now called The Lady of the Forest or something like that. It's kind of more from Marion's point of view.
Oh, yeah.
It actually skips around a lot between different people's point of view. It was written in the 90s. It's Jennifer Robertson. And Robin in it. It's kind of interesting because Robin has come back from the Crusade and he's like super PTSD fucked.
Which makes sense. Like, these are bloody, gory, like, crazy conquests.
Yeah, so it's interesting because they kind of, like, from his point of view, they go into detail about, like, how being in war in your armor and how hot it would get and how hard it was for people to breathe. And, like, it's kind of, like, a cool, like, description that you wouldn't really think of, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's kind of describing how horrible it is for the English soldiers who aren't used to the heat. And they're all getting sick because the water is making them sick. And so, like, people are just dying from dysentery and lack of food and, you know, dehydration and just how the horrible conditions that are there.
Yeah, well, and it makes perfect sense when you think about the difference between England and going into the Holy Land, like, even just into, like, Turkey. It's like you're starting to get, like, really, really, like, desert conditions that you don't
have. Well, and if you're, like, have any, like, chainmail or armor on.
Yeah. Well, and even that, I've read that, like, it would rub and you'd start to get, like, skin irritations. Mm-hmm. But unlike, you know, modern day where you have stuff that you can, like, naturally put on, like, a skin irritation can actually lead to an infection that can kill you.
Oh, yeah.
And
no,
so,
no penicillin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's, like, it's really easy to die.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it sounds like the whole thing was pretty brutal. In the end, Saladin and Richard call a truce.
Yeah, because, like, everybody's headed home for Richard. Mm-hmm. And Saladin, I think, ran out of money.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either side was doing particularly well, but they managed to hold the city.
Yeah.
They agree to call a truce and have peace for 3 years, during which time Christians are still allowed to come into Jerusalem for pilgrimage and to visit, like, the Holy Sepulchre and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, not necessarily the outcome that he wanted. Like, you know, he got Acre, I guess. I don't know if... So, I don't know. Is the Crusade a success?
I mean, it's not
really?
I think it's, like, it's not a loss. Like, I don't
just
think
a huge loss of men and money and time. And
yeah, like, I feel like they didn't give up anything other than, yeah, you're right, like, money, men, and all of these important elements.
Richard's not worried about that.
No, he's like, I'll just tax people more. It'll be fine. Who needs men? I've got me.
So, yeah, that's kind of how that, closes out that battle, or that crusade, I guess, with kind of like a bit of a whimper.
Yeah, well, and Richard's like, I gotta go back, because this is, like, John has now started to plot against him, and John's actually plotting with Philip.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Philip's not very happy with, the bromance has gone sour.
Yeah.
Or if you want to believe, the lovers are quarreling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he took him out. It wasn't a very good date, like, taking him to the Middle East in that time. Not a very good date.
Yeah. So everyone starts sailing back to their, you know, places. Richard's fleet sinks around Venice.
Yep.
I believe. So he has to head back on land. And at this point, this is where he runs into Leopold, who he has pissed off.
Yeah, Leopold's like,
And Leopold has him arrested and hands him over to the Holy Roman Emperor.
Yo.
Who is also Henry. He's a different Henry.
Yes.
Told you.
Isn't it also, like, Henry the Lion or something? And so it's, like, super confusing.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
So anyway, now Henry, our Henry, the Lionheart, is in prison somewhere in Germany. Or what becomes Germany.
Yeah, because it's, like, Prussia at the time or something.
Bavaria.
Bavaria.
So the Holy Roman Emperor is Henry the Sixth.
Okay.
Who imprisons him in Trifels Castle.
Germany. Southwestern Germany. Okay. So Bavaria.
So, and the emperor at that point decides to demand a huge ransom for Richard.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah. To a country, England, of course, that has no money.
Because he just went on crusade and spent it all. But he's been, you know, he's been taxing them. Like, mm-hmm. they gotta have some money, right?
So he demands 100,000 pounds of silver. I have no idea how much that would be today, but I'm sure it's a ton of money. 2 to 3 times the annual income for the English crown under Richard.
Wow.
So Eleanor, who's back home, you know, rooting for her son to come home, she is working on raising the ransom, and she does do it. Like, yeah. Somehow.
Well, I mean, she taxes people, like, heavily. And takes money from the church, I believe?
Both clergy and laymen were taxed for 1/4 of the value of their property. gold and silver treasures from the churches were confiscated. So, also, I was going to mention, when Richard is raising money for a crusade, I mean, this is so suddenly, during this period of time, anybody can be a knight if they can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
All you had to do is buy a knighthood. So any random person who had X amount of money, which I don't even think was that much.
No, I don't think
because
so.
Because he wanted money.
Yeah.
So there's all of a sudden these, like, all these shitty knights around.
Yes.
All these, like, subpar knights. So being a knight is, like, Richard basically made being a knight, like, not that cool anymore.
So now they're, like, instead of knights of shining armor, they're, like, knights of rusted armor.
Yeah, or just, like, ones who can't fight that well.
Yeah.
Or, like, yeah.
They like the Spamalot knights rather than, like, the knights of the round table.
Yeah. And he even was, he's quoted as saying that he would sell London if there was somebody with enough money.
So, you know, my view of Richard is really moving away from Great King now. Like, it's starting to tick down.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to imagine that he cared about England at all.
Yeah.
As anything more than a bank account.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Eleanor scrapes together all this money, basically by taking everything she can from, you know, the church or any other way she can manage to get money out of people, and they do get the ransom together.
Yeah, and John and Philip are plotting against him at the time, too. Like, they're trying to get the emperor to continue to hold him.
Philip, finally on February 4th, 1194, mm-hmm. Richard was released, and Philip sent a message to John saying, "Look to yourself, the devil is loose."
Whoa, so that romance is totally falling apart.
Yeah. So I guess they didn't manage to plot in time for him to, or maybe they were hoping he'd die in jail.
Yeah, it's entirely possible, yeah. You know. Or, you know, they're hoping that Eleanor's just not going to be able to raise that money, and he's just going to be stuck there forever.
So again, sort of like the father, Henry II, Richard comes home and his brother has been trying to revolt against him and he forgives him. And he's like, "Oh, John, it's okay. You're my brother.
Tap, tap, tap.
Don't do that."
Yeah.
But what he won't do, because Richard has no children, because he spends zero time with his wife, whose name is Berengaria.
Yes.
So he doesn't have any heirs, but John is the next in line, but he won't name John now.
Because he's revolting.
So he still gives John, like, some land and a castle and, you know, lets him live.
Yeah.
But he names his nephew Arthur. So he comes back and hangs out in England for, like, a short period of time, and then he goes back to Aquitaine.
And John's staying in England when he does this, too, because, like, he gives John Normandy, I think.
Or... I think he gives John Ireland.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would be a good one.
But, like, everyone there hates him.
Well, John's...
I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, you think of John from Robin Hood. Mm-hmm. He's not a very likable dude.
So Richard spends the last few years of his life basically defending Aquitaine against, what's his face?
Philip. Yeah.
Because Philip's like, is pissed off that these French/English kings have land in France.
Yeah.
Like, you have to keep in mind that France and Spain and Germany all looked very different than they do now, and they were divided up into all these territories. So Aquitaine, there was a bunch of other territories that they had, actually, the English kings had.
Yeah, and they're all duchies, which, when I first started taking medieval history, I thought was such a hilarious word.
Because pass the duchy to the left-hand side.
Exactly. And I would sing that in my head all through my classes.
Oh, but I hate reggae.
That's fair. I'm not a big fan. I enjoyed it when I was in Jamaica.
You've been to Jamaica?
Yeah, I went on my honeymoon to Jamaica. It was a good time.
That's your experience with duchies.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that's really, it just tells you where Richard's attentions are, which is that he wants to protect Aquitaine, and he doesn't really spend a lot of time doing anything more with England.
No, I don't think he ever goes back to England.
No, I don't think so, because he dies in this young guy, this soldier, he's like, wants revenge for his brother and his father's death. I don't know whether this is a war thing or whatever. He hits him with an arrow.
Yeah.
Not even really that, like, vitally. Like, he doesn't hit any organs or anything.
I think it's, like, in his leg or something.
But it turns into an infected wound.
Yeah.
And eventually Richard dies.
Yeah.
I mean, after all this warrioring and crusading and all this triumphant heroism.
Yeah.
Or semi-kind of triumphant heroism.
Yeah.
He's kind of taken out by a scratch.
Well, and that was one of the things that my professor taught me about when I took a medieval history course, like, you know, I don't even want to say how long ago, is that part of the mythos surrounding Richard gets enhanced by the fact that his death was like an arrow to the leg, because then you can compare him to Achilles, who's also a great warrior.
What is this whole like arrow in the knee thing? Is this like a gamer?
Oh, that's like in Skyrim, apparently. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know anything about video games, but I feel like I like remember this being a thing.
Yeah, it's something to do with Skyrim. Which I've never played either.
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe they're all referencing Richard.
Maybe. I mean, they are set in, like, old times.
When I was studying for my medieval art history exam recently, this was early medieval, so basically stopped around the year 1000, so we didn't get close to this period. But I need background noise to study.
Yeah.
So I was putting on, like, medieval tavern music. Oh, yeah. It was, like, getting me in the mood, and then it's, like, a little bit of background noise with no speaking.
Yeah.
And then I found, like, Skyrim tavern music, which, like, I'm not a gamer, but it was great. And yeah. Then even had, like, all the visuals of people just, like, walking around a tavern.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was useful for studying. That's the most use I've ever gotten out of Skyrim.
Is just the walking around.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's pretty much it for Richard. Like, he does then, like people do still love him. I don't know how the people, like, immediately surrounding him do. Like, I don't know how many people, like, what England feels about Richard. But, like, history definitely loved Richard.
Well, I think it was a couple hundred years after that people were really starting to write more romantic medieval stories. I mean, especially, I think, in the Victorian era. I think there were some really popular Robin Hood books written.
Yeah, it's like the Victorian Edwardian period that it's like mm-hmm. where he really rises.
Well, and then, you know, you have like the black and white movies with Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really classic gem with Kevin Costner.
Oh, yeah. and there's, you know, Men in Tights.
Yeah, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. I think Patrick Stewart plays Richard in that.
He does. Yeah. He does. I did not know that. And then I was telling Patrick, like my husband Patrick, that we were going to be doing this podcast. And he's like, oh, Patrick Stewart.
Exactly.
Yeah. He got so excited.
But Patrick Stewart's Richard the Lionheart is obviously like the best guy ever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much all of them in those Robin Hood movies are.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the newest
one. It's a very fictionalized two-dimensional heroic figure.
Yeah. I think the most accurate one, he's not in it very much. I've talked about it before when we podcasted, is The Lion in Winter, which mm-hmm. is set with, like, Eleanor of Aquitaine in jail.
See, and you and I have talked about this movie, especially because we went to Canterbury and saw the shrine of Thomas Becket,
yeah,
which we didn't really get into, but he was murdered potentially by people in the name of Richard's father, Henry II.
Yeah,
so this is kind of tied up with the same family.
Yeah,
but I read recently when I was preparing for this that they allude to the fact that Richard and Philip are lovers in that.
I watched it so long ago that it's entirely possible. I know that he does, like, Henry does talk about the fact that, like, Richard is off with the King of France. Mm-hmm. And so, but I don't, I mean, I watched this when I was in university, taking medieval history, which was, like, 2001, I want to say.
Yeah, I think I would like to watch it soon.
It's really good. We should have a movie night and watch mm-hmm. it.
Cool. Yeah, so, I mean, thoughts about Richard in general. Like, when I was researching, I thought, like, well, maybe he's so driven by his faith that he has to go on crusade. Mm-hmm. But you don't really come across a lot saying that he's pious at all.
No, there's nothing that really talks about his mm-hmm. faith. Like, I feel like Richard went on crusade because he liked battle.
Yeah, I mean, it really seems a lot more ego-driven. I guess, like, it's really easy to say war in the name of religion is bad. Uh-huh. Objectively, yes. But medieval Europe was a very different place, and religion was a part of every aspect of everyday life. So, you know, religious war was a thing that happened a lot. But overall, I mean, that crusade did nothing for England.
No.
They didn't even retake the city. They didn't have... I mean, I think it sounds like William Longchamp and did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I don't think... I mean, had Richard been there, I think he probably would have done a good job because he was a smart guy. He was politically smart. He was... he could handle financial decisions. If he had stayed in England, he probably would have been a good king.
My worry with Richard, though, is because he was, like, so into battle that even had he stayed in England, I feel like he would just, like, invade neighboring territories, and, like, he may have expanded England's rule.
He did not seem capable of hanging out.
No, and so I feel like he might have tried to expand England's rule, which, again, like, maybe he would have been successful, but it also could mean that he, you know, all of his peasants get terrorized by invading armies and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is also a period of English history where the social divide is just humongous.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of low-ranking farmers who are, like, English or Anglo-Saxon sort of by descent, and then the upper aristocratic class are more Normans.
Yeah.
Or Norman-Saxon sort of blend, which means, like, people, royalties come over from France since the, you know, William the Conqueror.
Yeah.
Basically has come over. So, I mean, it's very much two different worlds. I mean, it makes you wonder, like, how much interaction or knowledge he would have known about his people at all.
Well, and it's not the same as, like, modern day, where you can just, like, have an internet survey and try to get the feel for mm-hmm. what your people are doing, or follow, like, you know, take a look at Twitter. But, yeah, in those days, like... you're physically removed, like, the castles and the farms are physically removed, like, the farms are typically on the land of the castles, but those are, we're talking about, like, huge, huge properties.
One thing that was true in Robin Hood, so, like, I know you said Robin Hood's not real, but it does illustrate some points very well for the time period we're talking about.
Yeah.
It was illegal to hunt game in the woods. I mean, the king or nobleman owned most of the wooded areas or most of the land.
Yeah.
And people are starving and they're not allowed to go, like, hunt birds.
Yeah.
Because it's illegal. It's the king's woods.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, poaching was a big issue. People got hung for poaching all the time.
Yeah, which is, it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows a real disconnect with what's happening with your people.
Yeah, totally. And or care.
Yeah, and I mm-hmm. feel like kings in that era, like, I think in modern times when we look back and start to, like, look at actual kings' rule, we start to consider these things, but at the time, and even, like, you know, in, like, the Victorian and, like, Edwardian eras, we didn't, like, we never looked at what it was like for your average, like, Englishman or your average Frenchman. It was, like... this is what it's like for the rulers. It's mm-hmm. not. It's not about... history is about, like, the big fancy people, not about...
well, the common people can't write, and who's going to write about the common people? So I think now you look at rulers, or even royals. Like, I look at, you know, William and Kate and Harry and Meghan.
Yeah.
now, and I think that even though they're born in a very affluent families, I think they have the ability to see what life is like for people.
Yeah.
And they do spend time, you know, trying to be involved in, you know, volunteering or working with, you know, different communities, societies.
Yeah.
I think that they are much more connected, whereas, like, you look at a family like the early Plantagenets, and I just think that they have no idea. I think that they are really screwed up.
Yeah.
I think that they're so power hungry. They have these terrible tempers. It's all just power and land and money grabs in between. I think they're probably all extremely paranoid all the time, too, because everyone's backstabbing each other all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that, yeah, like, there's just no concept of reality.
Yeah.
And that these people's, like, whims and decisions affect the lives of thousands and millions of people.
Well, there's no way they can even remotely relate to the general public, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have anything that can help you other than observing them. But then again, you're just observing. You're not actually going and living it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, yeah, there's a complete disconnect.
Mm-hmm. That at least is my impression.
That's where I am, too. Yeah. I completely agree. Like, I think it's just, there's a complete disconnect. There's a complete lack of understanding, lack of relating. And so I don't think they try.
Well, and especially living in that extremely Christian Catholic environment. I mean, we're getting a little far away from this. We talked a lot about this in the class I just took on early medieval stuff. The idea of divine and sacred kingship, which was really prevalent during the Carolingian era. So it's like Charlemagne and the Ottonians, like Otto III.
Yeah.
So this is like 800 to 1000 and beyond. The idea that, like, they're doing all this, like, PR, basically saying that I'm directly chosen by God.
Mm-hmm.
And kings probably believed this for hundreds of years, that they, and maybe still do, I don't know, but that they have been chosen by God, so what they're going to do is right. They don't really have to think about it or question it too hard. They're doing the right thing because they're the king, and they have God's permission to do that.
Well, and in a way, God is speaking through them.
Exactly.
And, like, yeah.
Like, talk about power and narcissism. So, I'm going to answer the question plainly. Uh-huh. Do I think Richard the Lionheart is a good king? I think he could have been. I think he was smart enough to.
Yeah.
But he wasn't, because he chose what he wanted to do over his country, which means that you're not a good king.
Yeah, he's kind of like the anti-hero.
Well, he's the hero, quote unquote, but, like, it's funny. I think about this a lot watching Star Trek, about, like, we were talking the other day, what makes a good captain? It's not rushing out and doing the thing that's fun. It's like, you know, weighing up the needs of your crew and making the best decision for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's the same thing with ruling a country.
Yeah, exactly. You have to do what is the best for your people. So, yeah.
Which means you're not always going to be, like, fun and exciting. And, like, you have to be, like, level-headed and kind of boring sometimes, I think, to be, like, a really good ruler.
Yeah, like, sometimes you have to sit and run the numbers.
Exactly. So, Richard is a good storybook hero, but he is not... He is not a good king, and he is not the king that I knew from my childhood love of Robin Hood.
I know, it's like dreams have died.
But I still love Robin Hood.
Yes.
But he is fictional, and that's okay.
And, you know, you can't take away fictional.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Erin, for breaking my four-month streak of not recording.
You're very welcome. It was very fun to be back on.
Yeah, so cheers.
Cheers!
To our not very good French wine that I got. So that's fine, because it's a not very good French king.
Perfect.
Well, that wraps up our episode. And if you'd like to send us an email, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at thetipsyarchives@gmail.com. Also, please follow us on Twitter at tipsyarchives. I'm Rachel Liggy, and thank you so much for listening.